Ladies and gentlemen, it's a great pleasure to welcome all of you to our JEP Identity lecture this evening. This will be the very first time that in all of our 25 years that we'll be having a lecture right on an ice glacier. So it's wonderful to hear hopefully some words of Torah that will help us create a nice a thaw, at least on the inside, that will warm us up. With Hashem's help, we of course would like to express our great appreciation to Shelley Goldfeder, our hostess. Shelley has a special enthusiasm for opening her home to Torah events. I know that for Shelley, our being here each and every year is a highlight that she's very, very enthusiastic about. So we would like you to know that we're pleased to be back. And we thank you very much for your splendid hospitality. Our lecture tonight is a memorial lecture in memory of Yehuda Goldfeder, Shelley's late husband. Usually when we have a memorial lecture, I didn't know, you know, whoever it is that someone is asking us to, you know, to remember. In this particular case, Yehuda of blessed memory and I had a very, very special friendship. He was an individual that I admired very, very greatly. He exhibited a very special love. He had a great love for the Jewish people in general. He cared about individuals, and he made it very clear that he cared in the way he went out of his way for people. He certainly also exhibited a special love for Eretz Yisrael. He was someone who was, you know, some people love Eretz Yisrael, but it's more of a sort of a theoretical love, which is also has value. But his love for Eretz Yisrael was something that was down to earth. He did things for Eretz Yisrael. He just really taught us all to develop a greater appreciation for the great gift of having Eretz Yisrael. I think it would be fair to say and appropriate to say that when in Pirkei Avos we find that, according to one of our sages, the most outstanding, most important pathway in life that one needs to cleave to as a Jew is the pathway of a lev tov, a good heart. Undoubtedly, Yehuda was an individual who had a very, very wonderful heart, and certainly you, Shelley, were blessed with so many years together with Yehuda. And undoubtedly, Yehuda is serving in his capacity as a Melitz Yosher at this time. He is certainly an advocate for you, Shelley, for the Jewish people as a whole, and I have a feeling that he's an advocate for JEP of Westchester as well. He did a lot for us when he was here, and we hope that our being here tonight will do a great deal to elevate his departed, very, very precious neshama. Usually at this point, when I introduce our guest speaker, so I have to prepare a little something. Suffice it to say that I hail from an exotic island called Manhattan, and I currently reside, well, you know, I'm just kidding too much. It's really a great pleasure to be here with all of you and welcome all of you. You know, tonight's lecture I've entitled Divine Audit. So I'll tell you what I did this evening. I did a little homework before I came this evening. I figured, look, we're in tax season now. And that's, you know, and we, you know, people are concerned about, you know, filling out their forms, and people certainly want to do their very best to avoid an audit. So I called up my accountant, Now, my accountant used to work for the IRS, and she used to do tax audits. So I was curious. I asked her if she had any idea, you know, what's the percentage of people who have to undergo the difficult experience of going through an audit? So she told me the following. This is about an hour and a half ago. She said, people in the middle class, what percentage would you imagine have to go through an audit? She said, approximately 3%. And those who are in the upper class, she said, about 15%. So those in the middle class, that means 97% don't have to go through an audit. And in the upper class, 85% of people don't have to go through an audit. Now, when we're talking about a divine audit, when we're talking about having to give an accounting to our Creator for, you know, how we conduct ourselves in this world, the figure is 100%. Everybody has to go through an audit. There's no way to avoid that. As a matter of fact, in Pirkei Avos, our sages advise that there are three essential ideas that can help keep a person on, you know, on the proper pathway in life to avoid slipping and sliding and, you know, falling into life's spiritual potholes, if you will. And one of the suggestions that our sages make is that we need to be aware as we go through life of the fact that sooner or later we're going to have to give a din v'cheshbon. We're going to have to give a final accounting before the Almighty, and that's a sobering thought. I guess it's a thought that perhaps, you know, sometimes we try to shy away from a little bit, but the truth of the matter is it's a very uplifting thought because it can help us to keep our focus in the right area and be productive and accomplish. So it's not an idea to shy away from. It's a reality check idea, if you will. Now, when we talk about a divine audit, we realize that, of course, that entails, you know, consequences. And when we look at the 13 basic principles that are outlined by the 13 basic principles of Judaism that are outlined by the Rambam, by Maimonides, principle number 11 is as follows. Ani ma'amin be'emunah shelema. I believe with a complete faith, meaning I don't just kind of think it's probably true, but I understand with certainty that and the following idea, Shabari is Baruch Shemo, that our Creator, may His name be blessed, Gomel Tov L'Shomrei Mitzvosav. Hashem bestows reward upon those who observe His mitzvos. Umanish le'ovrei mitzvosav, and Hashem, the Almighty, punishes those who transgress upon His mitzvos. So this is obviously a very fundamental idea. You know, if we want to get an idea how far we take this concept. By the way, I want you to know, if you noticed on the subtitle that I've come up with under Divine Order, Understanding God's System of Compensation. So, if you know, I decided tonight, and I can't talk about everything under the sun, so we spoke about the fact that there are two aspects to the consequences. There's the reward aspect, if we, you know, play our cards right, and there's the punishment aspect. Tonight, I hope to be focusing on the reward aspect. That's why we labeled it as compensation. Okay, both areas are very important, but, tonight I'd like to discuss the Almighty's system of compensation. One thing we need to know is that Hashem's system of compensating us for a mitzvah is a very exacting system. And I'll give you an illustration of what I mean. If we look in the Parsha of Mishpatim, which we read a number of weeks ago, we find that the Torah tells us what we're supposed to do if we, let's say, you know, someone is involved in processing kosher meat. And they take a kosher animal, and we know that, what do? We, of course, there's a procedure of shechita, of ritual slaughter, but we're not ready to send the meat yet to the butcher shop. We have to check the meat, we have to check the animal, to ascertain that there isn't any, there was no special medical problem that, you know, would have meant that the animal sort of was going through its life with one foot on a banana peel. So what we, the main thing we check for today, of course, we check to see that there shouldn't be a hole in the lung. So what happens if you have a kosher slaughtering house, and you know, you have the steer, and they shecht it, they slaughter it, and they find there's a hole in the lung. So, you know, it's very expensive. You can't just dump it. What do? So it's interesting. The Torah tells us what to do with an animal that we find to be a trefa. By the way, the word trefa has two connotations. Generally, when people use the word trefa, they refer to something that's prohibited to eat. Okay? So if you have, you know, cake from a non-kosher bakery, we say it's treif. That's one connotation of the word trefa. But the narrower connotation of the word trefa, and that's the one that I'm referring to, it's referring to an animal of a kosher variety that has this problem, let's say, the hole in the lung. So the Torah says, what do? If you have a trefa, you have an animal that's a trefa, Pasuk tells us, La kelev tashlichen oso, that you're supposed to give it to the dogs. It's interesting that, you know, why does the Torah have to tell us what to do with a trefa animal? We'll figure out what to do with it. But Hashem says, no, I'm telling you what to do with it. You give it to the dogs. Why? So Rashi says, I'll tell you why. Because Hashem wants to teach us that he does not withhold compensation for doing something good from any creature, even a dog. What are the dogs being compensated for? Mm-hmm. We know, as the Torah records, that when the Jewish people were, you know, they left Egypt during the Exodus, the Torah tells us that, you know, as they were leaving, you know, 3 million Jews were leaving, not one dog barked. You know, there were, you know, I mean, what would have been so terrible if they barked? You know what I mean? They were all happy to get out of there. You know, finally 210 years in Egypt, so the dogs say, yeah, you know, the dogs are around, the dogs are barked. Hashem wanted to make it as pleasant as possible for the Jewish people. So the dogs didn't bark, says Rashi. Because of the fact that the dogs didn't bark, Hashem decided to reward the dogs by providing them with the trefa meat. Now you understand what we're talking about over here. We're not just saying that the dogs of the generation of the Exodus were rewarded, but all of their future ancestors, all the dogs living today, this is a law, this is a din that applies in all generations. Supposed to give the trefa animal to the dogs. So Rashi says, what do we see? That in case anybody might imagine that if we do a mitzvah, you know, Hashem, you know, he's running a big universe, you know, maybe his, you know, his inventory system, you know, is a, you know, I can't tell you, you know, every little tiny thing I do that's right, I'm going to get rewarded for. So this din, says Rashi, is designed to teach us that in Hashem's, in the Almighty's audit, anything that we're supposed to be compensated for, we can count on it. We can bank on it. It's going to happen. And of course, the dogs, you know, this is the dogs, we understand, it's not like the dogs made a conscious decision, we're not going to bark. You know, it's not like there was a dog convention and one of the dogs got up and said, listen, all the Jews are leaving tonight. Come on, guys, let's do it right. No barking tonight. Okay. Whoever says woof, you know what I'm saying? You know, and they all agree. No, that's not what happened. You know, obviously, you know, we're talking about creatures that don't have the gift of free will. Hashem didn't let them bark. But nevertheless, Hashem is, you know, he compensates them. So, yes, Richie.
I thought you can also sell the meat to a non-kosher facility as well.
We do that. Yes, that's correct. I mean, I guess, you know, I mean, you're talking about thousands and thousands of trefa animals. If we gave them all, first of all, I don't even think we, you know, there's a law of supply and demand for dogs also. I don't think they can handle all the trefa meat. You know, we got to do something with it so we can sell them. That's right. Good point, Richie. Fine. Now, An example, you know, we talk about, you know, small little things that we might do. Let's say one day, you know, you're running for the Metro North train and you meet somebody at the station, you know, and it's somebody you know, and you give them a nice good morning. Maybe the guy looks a little down and say, oh, say good morning. Good morning, how you doing? You run out, get onto the train. Now, the fact that you made this guy feel good by giving him a nice, warm good morning, you're not going to walk around thinking, boy, I did a mitzvah today. I can't wait till Hashem rewards me. You're not going to think about it. You know, 5 minutes later, 2 minutes later, it's out of your mind. You're not going to think about it again for the rest of your life. But after 120 years, when it comes time for the audit, Hashem will, you know, when he reviews the events of our lives, and that's what happened, that's part of the audit, that Hashem, you know, the Vilna Gaon talks about the fact that a person is, you know, given a review of their lifetime, and when Hashem will review our lifetime, he's going to say, that good morning at the Metro North train station, you're going to get rewarded for that. So this is that's an important piece of information. Now, I'll tell you the truth. Some people, when they, you know, when I present this idea that God rewards us, and you know, it's not just an idea, but it's one of the 13 basic beliefs of a Jew. I've heard some people express to me that, you know, seems a little bit unidealistic. You know, we're mature adults, and you know, I've heard people say to me that you know, maybe we really shouldn't be thinking about reward when we do mitzvos. Maybe we should just think about doing mitzvos for the ultimate reason of serving the Almighty, living moral, ethical lives as defined by Hashem. You know, the idea of rewards, that's for school kids, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, talk to me about serving God because I want to get a reward. Like, I've heard people, you know, I guess, take offense to that idea. So I'd like to raise this question, whether it is appropriate for us, you know, we have seen that there's reward that's in the pipeline, but I'd like to raise the question with you this evening of whether it's appropriate for us to think about reward to motivate ourselves to do mitzvos or not. That's the question I'd like to put on the table. And I'd like to say to you, ladies and gentlemen, that the answer to this question of whether we should be thinking about reward is yes and no. Yes and no. Now that I've thoroughly confused you, I will tell you why I say yes and no. Because we have a Mishnah in the third chapter of Ethics of the Fathers, Pirkei Avos, In the first chapter of the third Mishnah, that tells us that we should that al tiyu kavodim hamishamshin esarav amanas lekabel pras. Don't be like a servant who serves his master on condition that he should get rewarded. Don't be like those guys. Why not? What's the matter with being like those guys? Because, you know, when you are serving a master and it's all about your paycheck, it's all about the reward you're going to get to the master, your service is really, to a certain extent, self-centered. You know, you're interested in your, you know, yourself, not really that interested in the master. Rather, the Mishnah continues, Elo hevu kavodam amasham shenasal asarav shalom abanas lekabel pras. Rather, you should endeavor to be like a servant who serves the master not for the purpose of attaining the reward. So what should we be having in mind? Ideally, when we serve Hashem, we should be trying to express our love for the Almighty. That's a very high level of serving Hashem. Avas Hashem. Wonderful. That's what we should aspire to. That's what the Mishnah is teaching us. So it sounds from this wording of this Mishnah that I just quoted, that the answer to the question I posed is no. we should not be thinking about the reward, because the Mishnah says, don't be like those servants who serve the master for the reward. Be like the other guys. So it sounds like we got to know. However, there's a commentary on this Mishnah, very, very classical commentary, one of the main commentaries we have on Pirkei Avos. The Medrash Shmuel says as follows. He asks a question. You know, this Mishnah tells us, don't be like the servants who serve the master for, you know, for the reward. Why does the Mishnah have to continue and tell us the flip side of that? Rather be like the servants who serve the master, not for the reward. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. You know, once I tell you, don't be like the servants who serve the master for the reward, so I'm not going to be like those guys. I'm going to be like, what should I do? I'll be like the other kind, the guys who serve the master, not for the reward. So the Medrash Shmuel knows that when we study Mishnayos, one basic principle we have in studying Mishnayos, we are aware that there are no extra words. So here, the Mishnah seems to be repetitive. It's unnecessary. No reason to tell it to me both ways. So listen to what the Medrash Shmuel says. Very, very profound idea. He says as follows. Supposing the Mishnah would just say, don't be like the servants who serve the master for the reward. If that's all the Mishnah said. Supposing I'm thinking of doing a mitzvah. And I'm honest with myself. I know what kind of guy I am. I'm not one of these guys who love Hashem. You know, I'm one of these guys who I just care about the reward. I like reward. That's what I like. Yeah. When I started for my regents in school, it was so that I could I could look forward to good stuff. So let's say I have an opportunity to do a mitzvah, and I know I'm not going to be doing this. If I do this mitzvah, it's not going to be because I love Hashem. It's a nice idea, but that's not me. I'm not there yet. You hear? So I might, if all the Mishnah said is don't be like the servant who serves the master for the reward, you know what I might decide to do? I better not do this mitzvah. I'm not going to do it because the Mishnah says don't be like the servant who serves the master for the reward. So I'm not doing the mitzvah. Cause I'll wait. Maybe one day I'll love Hashem. Then I'll be able to do the mitzvah. That's what I might think. I might say that it's just not the right thing to do. Therefore, says the Medrash Shmuel, that's the reason that the Mishnah has to tell it to us both ways. Because the Mishnah would like to make the following clear. When we talk about the idea of don't be like the servant who serves the master for the reward, that's an ideal that we should aspire to. But it said, the Mishnah goes on to put it in the positive form to make it clear that there's no prohibition against doing mitzvos if you don't love Hashem. Even if you are doing it because you want the reward, that's fine. That's why the Mishnah says it both ways. So, you know, before you can get your PhD, you first have to get a BA. You have to graduate. Before you can move on to graduate school. So before we can graduate to the level, to the lofty level of serving Hashem based upon love of Hashem, beautiful level, be up there in the celestial heights. Before we get there, we gotta start off small. We should not, that's what the Mishnah wants to make clear, that we can aim for the celestial heights, but we should not be embarrassed to serve God because I know that he's going to take good care of me. If I serve him, I got a lot to look forward to. That's a kosher idea. We shouldn't think on our level that there's anything wrong with focusing our thoughts on being able to attain the reward that is associated with each mitzvah. That's 100% appropriate to do. Now, I would like to point out that first of all that there are a number of factors that that when we talk about Hashem's system of reward, it's important to realize that there are a number of factors that are taken into account by Hashem during the period of the audit that we all are going to be one day, you know, dealing with. One of the things that we have to take into account is that we have to realize that Hashem actually gave us a clue in terms of his system of compensation. Hopefully, during the course of our lifetime, we will have the opportunity to fulfill many, many, many thousands, hundreds of thousands of mitzvahs. God willing, Hashem should give us the time, and he should give us the strength. You know, that's why, of course, that's what we want to have in mind when we daven to Hashem for long life. You know, what do we say during the Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and the days in between? We ask Hashem to Zochreinu that he should write us down. He should inscribe us in the book of life. What we ask Hashem, please, Hashem, I got to be here. I got to stick around for another year. Why? Lemancha Elokim Chayim. The reason that I'm asking you, Hashem, for another year is for your sake, Hashem, because I want to express my gratitude to you. I want to fulfill mitzvos. That's what we're supposed to be doing. So, listen, our sages tell us, and this is a mission in Pirkei Avos, our sages tell us that Hashem uses the following system in terms of allocating reward. This is inside information, everybody. Lefum tsara agra, which means that the reward is commensurate with the level of difficulty, with how much you toil. The more sweat beads that you have to work up to do the mitzvah, the greater is the reward. You know what that means? That means you could have two individuals who are doing what appears to be exactly the same mitzvah. Say, well, they should get the same reward. They're both doing the same mitzvah. That's not the system, though. Let's say you have two individuals who donate $500 to tzedakah. Right? The first guy who's donating the $500 to tzedakah, he happens to be on food stamps. He's having a very, very difficult time putting food on the table for his family. But he feels that this is a mitzvah. I got to do this mitzvah. He's very devoted. It's very hard for him to do the mitzvah. Then you have another guy who also gives $500 for tzedakah. But this guy is in Fortune 500. Yeah? So these two guys, when they appear upstairs for the audit, so the guy who's in Fortune 500, when he sees what the guy's going to get who was on food stamps, what they're going to give this guy, and then they're going to hand this guy, you understand, they're going to give him a booby prize, or I mean, he'll get something, you understand, but it's not going to be the same kind of reward. He's going to complain. He says, what's going on over? It's not fair. I did the same mitzvah. I'll show you I got the printout from the bank. What's that right? So they're going to tell the guy, you don't understand the system over here. The system over here is based on how much effort you expended in performing whatever mitzvah it is that you are performing. That's important to realize. Now, for us, I'll tell you why this is we don't have to wait until audit time before we can appreciate the system. You know why that's important for us to know now? Because sometimes we all find ourselves in situations where we have an opportunity to perform a mitzvah. Sometimes it's a mitzvah that can be very, very demanding. It's very difficult. I'm not used to this. This is not my cup of tea. It's hard for me to do this mitzvah. None of my friends are doing this mitzvah. I'll be embarrassed. It's hard. Yeah. So, but if we remember, lufum tsara agra, that the reward is commensurate with the toil, we will welcome the challenge of a difficult mitzvah. Because the more difficult the mitzvah, if we rise to the occasion and we perform this mitzvah, that means there's a huge bonus that we can look forward to. That's an important piece of information. Another very important piece of information when we talk about the compensation that's available to us when we perform a mitzvah, another thought here is what? Is the fact that when we perform a mitzvah, Hashem takes into account not only our ma'aseh, not only our deed, he also takes into account what we're thinking when we perform the mitzvah. Our thought process has a great deal to do with defining the mitzvah. Example, we know there's a mitzvah of being mesameach chosid and kala, of causing a chosid and kala to rejoice. Great mitzvah. So, supposing, you know, you go to a wedding, and you sit down at the table, and you got, you know, 12 people all sitting at the table. Now, you could say, well, you know, they're all doing the same mitzvah of rejoicing the chosid, you know, causing the chosid and kala to rejoice, right? They got the seating cards all for the same table, but, you know, something where Hashem, you know, he's got his own invisible MRI machine that examines our thoughts. Hashem knows that this guy at the table, why is he there? Because he loves smorgasbords, especially when they have the guy who's cutting the London broil, you understand? He loves smorgasbords, and he likes dancing with a nice Labadika band, you know, it's a machaya. He sees his friends, you understand? He's having a good time. Okay, is he performing the mitzvah? You bet your boots. He's performing the mitzvah of causing the chosid and kala to rejoice. But you got another guy, a quiet guy maybe, whether he's quiet or not, it doesn't matter. He's sitting at the table. And what is he doing at the wedding? He's thinking, I'm here because I want to make the chosid and kala feel good. You know, the chosid's a good friend of mine, and I want to be here for him. And I want to show him how happy and excited I am. Yeah? So he's there because he wants to cause the chosid and kala to rejoice. So if you get a video after the wedding is over and you look at these two guys, it'll look to us like these guys they're doing the same thing. But Hashem's evaluation of what these two guys are doing is entirely different. And of course, this is true every time we perform a mitzvah. That Hashem takes into account what we're thinking. That has a great deal to do with the mitzvah. When it comes to doing chesed, same story. You know, are we trying to help somebody? Are we trying to impress somebody? What are we accomplishing over here? Davening, another example, right? You can have, you know, you can have two people who finished a delicious meal and both of them take a bencher and they're sitting there benching. So you say, all right, they're doing the same mitzvah. One guy, he's like, you know, flying through the benching. He's saying the benching. He gets credit for the benching. By the way, I saw it in the Sefer. It's an important piece of information. You know, of course, we're supposed to try to work on upgrading our kavana, our thought process, when we dive in, very, very important. But I saw in a Sefer that I have that discusses prayer that Hashem rewards a person for praying even if they're, you know, they got their sneakers on and they, you know, they say the words. Of course, it's not the same, again, you know, it's not the same level of prayer and it's not the same level of reward as a person who's into it. But, you know, we of course want to upgrade. So, you know, what we call tefillah, you know, what I was saying is refer to tefillah as, what's the terminology? Avoda shebelev. It's service of the heart. So that's an interesting expression. Because, you know, I guess if somebody were to ask me, what's the best way to describe prayer? It's service of what part of me? I would say, avodah shebepeh. It's service of the mouth. It's good if you can incorporate your heart in the process as well. That's a good thing to do. But I would say, just say, no, that's you missed the boat. Because I would say, just tell us that it's all about your lave. It's all about your heart. It's all about what you're thinking. Hashem is interested in our thought process. I have to use my mouth. I have to say the words. But that's secondary to what I'm thinking in my heart. And, you know, this is, you know, of course, to be able to really daven, it's very, very important to, when we're not davening, to take a little peek at some of the prayers and look at the translation, maybe, you know, sneak a look at one of the, they have some wonderful English commentaries that are available. You know, 50 years ago, if a person was not a scholar and they wanted to do what I'm suggesting, they were out of luck because there was no such thing in English. Today, everything is out there, and, you know, in these forum stores, it's beautiful, it's magnificent, but it takes effort. So this is a very, tefillah is an excellent illustration of what we're talking about. how our machshavos, our thought, when we're doing a mitzvah, makes a huge difference in terms of how much reward is available. Now, I would like to share with you, to remind all of you here tonight of something that everybody is well aware of. Right? We know that one of the basic prayers we say is the Shema Yisrael. So in the second paragraph of the Shema Yisrael, remember we're talking about the fact that, you know, Hashem has a system of compensation. He rewards us for the mitzvahs that we perform. Here we go in the second paragraph. V'hoyo im shemoa tishmu el mitzvosai. Hashem says, it will be if you will diligently follow my commandments, if you'll stay in the game, you'll consistently fulfill my mitzvos. Asher enochi mitzaves chayom, that I command you today. La'avos Hashem elokeichem, to love Hashem your God. Uleovdo, not just to love him, but, you know, Hallmark card says that, you know, when you care to send the very best, you know what I'm saying? So if we want to demonstrate our love for Hashem, we have to perform Hashem's mitzvos. That's how we express our love for Hashem. So Hashem says, if you guys get it right, and if we love Hashem and we fulfill the mitzvos, b'chol levavchem, with all your heart, b'chol nafshchem, and with all your soul, what will the result be? V'nosati mitaratzechem b'ito, and I will give you rain for you on your land in its proper time. Right? No tsunamis and no sandies, but it'll be at the proper time. Yore umalkosh. There's rain that falls. One rain that falls is, it's an early rain. It's a lighter rain than in the later part of the winter. And umalkosh, and also the heavier rain. V'yosafta degonecha. And you will gather in your grain, v'siroshcha, v'yitzerecha, and your wine and your oil. V'nosati ezer b'sodcha. And I will place the grass in your field of hemtecho for your cattle, for your chalta v'savata. You'll eat and you'll be satisfied. Ah, here it is. Clear statement. Torah spells it out. Hashem is going to reward us for our mitzvos. There's a problem, however, because it seems that our sages tell us schar mitzvah b'hai al moleka. In case, ladies and gentlemen, you would like to see some of that reward that we've been talking about this evening, guess what? If you're looking in this world to see the reward, you won't find it. Schar mitzvah b'hai amaleka. The reward for mitzvos cannot be found in this world, period, end of story. So we got a contradiction over here between what Hashem wrote in his Torah and what our sages are telling us. The Torah is spelling, Hashem is spelling it out over here. This is the compensation. But the sages say, forget about it. That's not it. The reward is in the next world. So how are we going to resolve this contradiction, ladies and gentlemen? We've got big problems here tonight. So I will share with you the beautiful insight of the Michtav Meliyahu, who said the following. He said, the sages, when they told us there's no such thing as a reward for mitzvahs in this world, they're 100% correct. What's the Torah talking about? The Torah's not talking about the reward. You know what the Torah's talking about? Very simply. I'll give an example. If you have some grandchildren, Baruch Hashem, if I got a 4-year-old grandchild and I'm trying to get him to study a little chumash or read the siddur or to daven a little, whatever it is, if I tell him, listen, Yankala, you know, if you'll daven nicely and you learn chumash, you're gonna feel so close to Hashem. You're gonna feel such spiritual bliss. Your neshama will be so inspired. Is that gonna work? Not gonna work. What do I have to do? I got to pull out a Hershey bar. I got to pull out a Hershey. I got to talk to this kid on his level. We hope that if he'll go for the Hershey bar, as he matures, we hope that he'll have a different perspective. He'll graduate to a different perspective. You understand? Says the Michtav Meliyahu, guess what? We are on the Hershey bar plan. Remember, Hashem says this in his Torah, Bodim Atem Lashem Elokeichem, you are children of Hashem. I would not like the four-year-old, but Hashem knows that we are not capable of functioning successfully and consistently if the Torah would only speak about the compensation plan in the world to come. So that's why, what does Hashem do? He talks to us in our language. He says, listen, I know what you guys are interested in. If you guys will fulfill the mitzvah, your stocks are going to go up. You're going to feel comfortable. You're going to be able to put out another patio. You're going to have a nice gas grill. You know what I'm saying? Like that. That's what you're interested in. So Hashem says, we'll take care of you. This is only a fringe benefit. That's all it is. It's not the real thing. You know, I remember, you know, years ago, I mean, some of you will remember this, the savings banks, they used to offer, if you would open up an account, they would give you, like things like a toaster. Remember those days? Corningware. By the way, in those days, if you remember, not only did they give you a toaster, but they also paid you interest, not 0.01, you know what I mean? Like, that's a joke, you know what I mean? That's like, give me a break, you know what I mean? Like, you know, you get your little form for the IRS for your interest savings for the year, you know, $17, you know what I'm saying? Like, give me a break, come on, like, don't bother, you know? But you understand that there's such a thing as fringe benefits. Hashem utilizes fringe benefits to motivate us. But the reward, we shouldn't imagine that the reward is, this is it. The reward is really in the next world. By the way, why is the reward unavailable to us in this world? Like, why can't that reward that Hashem has in mind for us to enjoy, and why can't that be available to us in this world? So I once heard a very interesting little analogy. You know, if you have a $1,000 check, and you go to your local, branch of your savings bank, you walk in and say, I'd like to cash this check. So the teller will cash you, they'll be happy to cash your check for $1,000. Now, if you walk into the local branch and you hand them a check for $3 million, they say, excuse me, I'd like to cash this check. The teller will look at the check and say, oh, I'm sorry, but if you want to cash a $3 million check, you have to go to the central office on Fifth Avenue. We don't handle that in a local branch. So the idea is, it's important for us to realize that in order, the reward that Hashem has in mind for us is so unbelievably spectacular, we have to realize that it's unavailable to us in this world, because in this world we're dealing with the local branch. The main branch is in the next world, Olam Haba, the world to come. That's the main branch. So, the reward for mitzvos is so far-reaching, it's so enormous, it's so spectacular, it's far beyond anything we can imagine, that it's impossible for us to be provided with that reward in this world that we're living in. That's one of the reasons why we have to wait until the next world. As a matter of fact, in Pirkei Avos, if you want to get in a little bit of an idea, we're talking about compensation for mitzvos, how spectacular is this compensation? So we find that Rabbi Yaakov, who was one of the sages of the period of the Mishnah, stated in Pirkei Avos that one kuras ruach, one whiff, a little whiff of the reward that will be available in the next world for performing mitzvos, is greater in the level of pleasure than all of the combined pleasures in this world. If you take all the trips to Hawaii and all the Lamborghinis and all the five-star restaurants and you name it, you put it into one super package of pleasure. That super package, and that's, we're talking about not just our pleasure as individuals, all the pleasures that humanity enjoys, you put into one spectacular package, one moment of pleasure, all of human history, it doesn't, says Rabbi Yaakov, it doesn't equal one whiff of the pleasure that's available in the next world. Now, of course, that's a nice piece of information, but of course we can't comprehend what the type of pleasure is that we're talking about. And by the way, that's why our commentaries tell us the Torah doesn't take the trouble or the time to describe the pleasure, because it's impossible. See, the pleasure that we're talking about in the next world is beyond our comprehension, because it's this very esoteric spiritual pleasure. And the reason that we can't comprehend it in this world is due to the fact that it's true we have a neshama, we have a soul, but our soul, while we are alive in this world, is attached to our body. And because of the fact that our soul is attached to our body, the soul is limited in terms of its ability to understand spiritual pleasure. We can experience a certain measure of spiritual pleasure in this world, but not nearly on the scale that it's available in the next world. So, for example, you know, if we do Shabbos right, we don't just, do Shabbos in it's a way that I'm walking around with a straitjacket. I'm not doing things. I'm not using electricity. I'm not doing this, not doing the other thing. And I come from shul. I plop into bed and I take my nap till 5 in the afternoon. That's my Shabbos. I'm missing out on the spiritual ecstasy of Shabbos. But if we do Shabbos right, then we can feel spiritual pleasure each and every Shabbos. And by the way, there's a very important difference. This is a very profound idea. There's a very important difference between physical, material pleasure and spiritual pleasure. Because when it comes to physical pleasure, no matter how much pleasure we can have in a certain experience, when the experience is over, if you would like to have the same kind of an experience, you have to start from scratch. Let's say if you go out to your favorite 5-star restaurant, you have everything prepared exactly like you like. It's a phenomenal meal, out of this world. I was just at a very nice restaurant the other night. It was a gemachaya. It was very good. Supposing next week I go back to the same restaurant and I order the same meal, same dinner, delicious dinner. We have the same waiter. Can I build on the pleasure that I had this past week in a restaurant? No. I have to start from scratch. Got to go back to ground to zero. But when it comes to spiritual pleasure accumulates. When we experience spiritual pleasure, if we do it right, as we go through life, when we experience a beautiful Shabbos, we feel that intimacy with Hashem. When next Shabbos comes, we don't have to start from ground zero. We can build on the spiritual ecstasy of the previous Shabbos and get to an even higher level. Very, very profound idea. So the Torah, Hashem understands that we are limited in terms of our ability to comprehend spiritual pleasure. So that's why the Torah doesn't even bother, focusing on just what it's like. There is a statement in the Talmud, in the Gemara, by the way, that gives us a little glimpse, but, maybe you will understand it better than me. It says that in the next world, tzaddikim yoshvim, righteous people will be sitting, v'atroseihem b'rosheihem, and they'll be sitting there with tzaddikim, righteous people in the next world, will be sitting with crowns on their head. And what kind of crowns? Where will the crown come from? Crowns can be very, very beautiful. You know what the jewels on the crown will consist of? The jewels on the crown that we're going to wear in the next world will be there as a reflection of the mitzvot that we performed. So, you understand? If we want to have a really beautiful crown, we want to try to, get the right stuff onto the crown by, fulfilling mitzvot in this world. So it says that tzaddikim yoshvim, tzaddikim will be sitting, v'atrosim b'rosheihem, and the crowns will be on the head, v'nenin b'ziv hashchina, and they're going to derive ecstasy from the divine presence of Hashem himself. So we could say the words, and I guess it gives us something to look forward to. We don't have any travel brochures about the next world, but it's important for us to appreciate the fact that the stakes, not in the restaurant, but the stakes are very, very high, very spectacular. There's a lot that there's a lot that's on the line over here, and that's why, you know what I would say, just tell us. Now we're talking about, you know, going for an audit. Our sages tell us that every Jew is obligated to become a CPA. Mm-hmm. Yeah, become a CPA. Do we have any CPAs here? Nobody? Okay, fine. So our sages tell us that heavy mechashev schar mitzvah keneged hefseda. You know, whenever, if we're thinking of doing a mitzvah, you know, there's a, you know, invariably there's a certain amount of difficulty involved in performing any mitzvah. We have to use time, we have to expend energy, we have to spend money, whatever it is that we have to do. There's a certain, let's call it a loss, that's what our sages refer to it. From our vantage point, from our perspective, it looks, if I'm going to do this mitzvah, gee, it's going to cost me. You know, in some way I'll miss a show, I don't know what, I'll lose some sleep, I'll get up early in the morning for me, whatever it is. There's a certain loss involved. So our sages tell us we got to become CPAs. Because what does a CPA do? A CPA is adept at weighing, you know, the income against, you know, in terms of, you know, what we are earning against what? Against the losses. So our sages tell us in Pirkei Avos, we need to make a calculation, a sophisticated calculation. We have to weigh what am I gonna lose if I do with this mitzvah against what am I gonna gain if I do this mitzvah. And if we're really very, you know, if we're adept at being CPAs and we understand some of these ideas that we're talking about, we're gonna realize there's no contest over here. It's a good deal. It's better for me. I'm happy to give up a little sleep, give up a little time, give up a little energy, give up a little money, whatever it is that I have to give up, it's a good deal. Because what I'm going to be gaining eventually, not only in terms of the fringe benefits in this world, but the long-term compensation, that's where the action is. If I could picture that, if I can, you know, hone into that idea, I can develop an internal sense of strength and willpower that can help me deal with many of the challenges of life. I would just like to conclude with, you know, one personal experience that maybe can help us appreciate what it is that we need to do to prepare for the audit. My wife and I, one time, about 4 or 5 years ago, we had occasion to visit Eretz Yisrael. So we came back, and we were on the plane on our way back, and it was the middle of the night, and we were exhausted. We had a hard time sleeping. We finally fell asleep, and the stewardess came around at, you know, for us, what was 2 a.m. in the morning, and she handed us turkey sandwiches. Yeah, 2 a.m. in the morning, turkey sandwiches, 33,000 feet up in the air. So we looked at each other, and we said, we just couldn't eat turkey sandwiches. But we were away from our home for about 12 days, so we had a good idea. We'll put the turkey sandwiches, we'll take it back home with us. So, you know, we didn't have much food in the house because, you know, we were gone. So we'll have turkey sandwiches for lunch. Be good. So that's what we did. So we put that in, our hand luggage, and then, we finished the flight. We got to the airport. We went to baggage claim. We got our stuff. And, some guy in the airport came along with this little small dog, a schnauzer, a little tiny schnauzer dog, very small. And this guy comes, over to us with his dog, and he says, "What do you have here?" I said, "What do you mean? What do we have here?" I said, "There's our luggage, He says, "I want to take a look." So what do you have here? He says, because the dog was barking. Remember, I told you before, in Egypt, the dogs didn't bark when they left, but in JFK, one dog was barking. He was barking. So it turns out that we had these sandwiches. He had contraband. So he said, "You can't take that in." you're not allowed to take this stuff in. And he took our, you know, the cards to get on the plane where you have to make a declaration, and he marked them so that when we would go through, we wouldn't be able to, we wouldn't be able to take these two turkey sandwiches with us. So I want you to know that that experience gave me food for thought. Not food, but food for thought. So here's what I was thinking. I was thinking like this. Listen, I said to myself, if to go through customs, there's such a sophisticated security system at JFK that they catch you if you got the wrong stuff. Can I imagine, you know, when we leave this world, we all have to pass through customs. And we have to realize that when we go through customs in the next world, they only let you in with certain merchandise. If you show up with the wrong stuff when you go through customs in the next world, the security system there, it's got to be better than JFK. So I realized that, you know, when we go through customs in the next world, what do they allow through? There's only one thing they allow through: mitzvos. It's the only thing they allow through. So, you know, we're all on a journey, and we're all, we're looking forward. You see, I want you to know all of these ideas that we're talking about are ideas that can help us get up tomorrow morning with a much greater sense of optimism. We got what to look forward to. Our lives have a sense of purpose. We're heading towards something spectacular. Hashem created us for that purpose. So if we can hone in on this idea and appreciate what I can do today, I got to pack my suitcases with diamonds today. That's what I got to do today. If we can get up every morning and after we drink our Tropicana orange juice, we can realize that today's the day I got to pack my suitcases. So that can help us to go through life looking forward, having a sense of purpose, connecting with the very idea that Hashem created us for in the first place. And with Hashem's help, at the right time, we can all enjoy the spectacular ecstasy that Hashem created us to enjoy. Any questions, ladies and gentlemen? Any questions? Yes.
You only talked about the mitzvahs. What about the levirot?
Well, I said in the beginning, we could do that as well for another hour, or we could come back at another evening. I happen to have a great deal to say about that subject as well, and I was asking myself whether I should try to deal with both areas, and I decided I would rather deal with one area adequately and thoroughly rather than try to squeeze too much in. But suffice it to say, it's very true that knowing something about, you know, the consequences, the negative consequences, that's very, very important. So, any other thoughts, ladies and gentlemen? Okay, I would like to invite all of you to consider joining us on Purim. Sunday, March 16th, we have a very beautiful Purim banquet at the Eden Walk restaurant right here on North Avenue. It's a really very special event. And any of you who would like to make reservations, please let us know. One other announcement I would like to make in connection with Purim is the following. There are four special mitzvahs that we perform on Purim. One of the four special mitzvahs is the mitzvah Matanos Levyonim. Hashem wants us to experience the joy of Purim, and he also would like us to share the joy of Purim with those who unfortunately are impoverished. So we have an obligation on Purim to help out those who are less fortunate. Now, of course, in Westchester County, there are some poor people, but, Baruch Hashem, there are not so many of them, and they're not easy to find, and it's very hard to find them on Purim. So I will tell you what we at Jeb of Westchester have been doing. This will be our 25th consecutive year that we're doing this. We raise funds through an organization called O. Joseph Chai. that distributes money to very, very poor people that are handpicked in Eretz Yisrael on Purim. So we invite any of you who would like to do so to participate in this very important drive. If between now and Purim, if you will, provide whatever it is that you'd like to provide. Of course, you know, for those who are hungry and unfortunate, we want to be as generous as we can. On Purim night, I call up a officer at Old Yosef Chai, and I tell him what we raised. And on Purim, you have people in Israel on standby who are ready to lay out the money so that the funds will be distributed on Purim. After Purim, I send all the checks to them, and those who laid out the money are reimbursed. That way, we can all fulfill the mitzvah of Matanos Lavyonim on Purim. So anybody who would like to participate in this mitzvah is welcome to do so. And one final note to look forward to. JEP of Westchester is eagerly looking forward to celebrating its silver anniversary at our annual dinner on June 1st. So those of you who would like more information, we'll be happy to provide you with it. And we certainly would be delighted if you could join us at that historic occasion, June 1st. Have a good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. Thank you. If we have a minion for Maariv, we can daven Maariv right now.